Tyakim of the Puyallup Nation, and you are listening to KAOS 89.3 FM.
Bone Days.
Bone Days. The great search for truth. Every meaning has a meaning. Dark and light have their reasons. Live and learn are the seasons.
Bone Days.
Bone Days. With all that's left, motions of everydayness and thoughts that won't leave, leaving behind another sameness. Bone Days. When all that's gone brings life to your knees. You don't know what to pray, so you keep making pleas.
This is Make No Bones About It, and this is Raven Redbone, and it is 5 o'clock, and I have on the line Uncle, and how are you this evening?
I am here.
And how are you?
I am good. How are you?
I'm doing really well. Thanks for calling in this evening, and appreciate you taking time from you. I know your busy schedule. I think you're up in Toronto, and this is Chaos Radio, 89.3 FM in Olympia, Washington, and I'm speaking with Uncle. And I wanted, if you would mind telling the audience a little bit about who Uncle is. I talked to Chief Phil, and he's possibly going to join us. And I know he's known you for a long time. And I've been listening to a lot of YouTubes, and I know that you say that it's okay to call you Uncle, but I was wondering if you would mind pronouncing your traditional name?
My name is Angangak, spelled A-N-G-A-A-N-G-A-Q. And it means the man who looks like his uncle, so thus most people in the world call me uncle. And I'm really happy to be an uncle to most people. Because when you mispronounce my name and you spell it A-N-A-A-N-A-Q, it means mother. Mm. I'm a pretty strong man. I can be your mother, not tonight though.
Yeah.
Maybe tomorrow. Tonight I will be your uncle.
Yeah. And
I'm talking to you from Greenland, actually.
Oh, wow.
The capital of Greenland in Nuuk.
Wow. And
And it is now 10 p.m. Where I am now.
Well, thanks for calling in. And I've been listening to a lot of the things that you've been sharing via the many media out there, and one of the things I'm really interested in among many is you talk about how the world has lost its ceremony, and
yes.
Can we talk a little bit about that and how you see that?
You know, I was on a radio show in New York City, and they were asking me why shamanism. Why are the shamans coming back? He asked me the question and said, because the world has lost its ceremony. And when you listen to the old people, they talk about the importance of ceremony, but we don't do them anymore. My grandmother, Anagasa is her name, she passed away in 1963 and she was born in 1893. Her greatest fear before she passed away was that she would leave behind a ritual, She says, life is a ceremony in itself, worthy celebrating with a ceremony. When the ceremony loses its spirit, it becomes a ritual, and the world is full of ritual as it is. My grandmother grew up, her grandmother, who was born the earlier part of 1800s. So she grew up with a story that the world is full of ritual as it is. And really, it is so true what she says, that when the ceremony loses its spirit, it becomes a ritual. And we have done a lot of, we have made a lot of things and made them rituals rather than celebrating with a ceremony. So that's what it is.
And in returning back to the ceremony, how would one bring that back into their life to bring that spirit back in? With everything that's going on in the world, I know myself included, I can feel the intensity of the fear, that mechanism that's out there, and it's hard to take that jump.
Mm-hmm.
How would one go about that?
You know, I'm so privileged. My father, bless his soul, when we were children, he would bring up a glass, and then he would fill it with some earth, and he would take a single strand of grass and put it in the center of the glass, and then she would show us, this is how we live. And then she would put a lid on it, and say, this is how we lived. This now belongs at the museum, where it no longer lives now, but now they can see how we lived. And he would say, when you take off the lid, it will live and grow forever. The water of life, it will be brought and it will live. And that's how we knew the difference between the ceremony and a ritual. Ceremony is something which grows within you and grows with you and you become better at it, and it lives because you brought the spirit to it. And thus, when the spirit goes of the ceremony you did, it becomes a ritual, and people would do it with that, the way it's been done. And it's really fascinating. I don't know if I told you, but I travel quite a bit in the world. And wherever I go and visit sacred sites. And I have visited many sacred mountains around the world. My world is not very big. I've only been in 53 countries. So I'm a very limited man. But in those 53 countries I have visited the sacred sites of the indigenous peoples. And it is really fascinating how the similarity of all native peoples, on the indigenous peoples of the world, how similar we are, because we talk about the very similar things. They all speak about the ceremony. But when they do it, they do it in ritualized form, because that's the way it's been done. And it is like we're trying to remember how it was done 500 years ago. But they don't quite remember how it was done 500 years ago. So they're trying to imitate things what happened long ago, and that doesn't make it living. And now I understand what my grandmother means. Life is a ceremony in itself, worthy celebrating with a ceremony. And that's what we need to have, all of us, in our native communities. We need to make our ceremonies living, so the beauty of you can live. You can come home to yourself.
Right. Coming
and back. And that's what it is. So. Does it make sense to you?
Yeah, like coming back, like realizing, like the way that I envision it as you were talking is we have the medicine wheel, but we are that medicine wheel. Our life is that that medicine wheel, and to bring the ceremonies out, that's what keeps the earth moving and ourself moving, and we are that prayer in motion, and we always got to remember that. And I like what you said about making it live, making it but trying to see, remember how it was done 500 years ago. I know, like, for me, I in my mind, the more that we mirror the way our ancestors had walked, we can return back to that living way. And but we do live in 2010 right now, and things are different, but we can definitely bring that ceremony, that life ceremony, into our lives right now, by walking, like you were saying, like becoming that prayer.
Yeah.
And
you know, I'm so glad you mentioned about the wheel, the medicine wheel. You know, my grandmother told us that the circle, which has no beginning, no ending, in which we all belong. The beauty of the circle is that we cannot see each other's backs. And the strength of the circle is that we can only see each other's beauty. I think of it often, Raven. I think of it often. The circle, which has no beginning, no ending, in which we all belong. And you know that we divide the medicine wheel into four colors. Yellow for the east, the white for the south, the west for the red, and the black for the north, the black man. Yellow man, the white man, the red man, and the black man. We belong all in that circle. The circle which has no beginning, no ending, in which we all belong, my grandmother told us.
Absolutely.
And in the east, when the sun rises, she always comes yellow. So thus we have the yellow people. In the south, when the sun shines highest upon us, she's always white. Thus we have the white people. And in the west, when the sun sets, she's always red. Thus we have the red people. And at night, it's always black. Thus we have the black people. And I think it's so incredible that these ancestors of ours remembered everybody. The yellow, the black, the red, and the black man. And then it speaks about the spring which represents the rising of the sun, the newborns, and those yet to be born are remembered. In the south, the women are remembered, and the children are remembered. The young people are remembered. And in the west, we remember the men and remember the adulthood. And in the north, we remember the old ones. And I think, wow, you remembered everybody. Because you and I, we were born, and we will become children, and we become adults, and we become old.
Absolutely, and I think when I hear you talking about that, and our ancestors did understand that, and that true power, and that the wheel, we need everyone to move forward, and mm-hmm. And in this time I've been finding, I'm 42 now, and just looking at how everything has moved, especially here in the United States, how they have forgotten about the red man, and and now we're heading into that time where we need to remember the red man and be mm-hmm. be the whole. And I know, like, in my knowing that that, and when that's done, and when the, especially here in this country, when that's done, we can move forward as a people. But we can't unless we have everyone.
Absolutely. United States of America will never move forward unless the red man becomes involved.
Right. And we have to
mark my word.
Yeah, and we
all. United States of America will never move forward unless the red man becomes involved.
Right, I absolutely agree with that, and that also that one of the things that I listened to you a video that you did, and I know this to be truth for me, is that longest journey is from your head to your heart, And I was wondering if we could just talk a little bit about that and what it means for you.
Yes. Oh, I'm so glad you asked about that. You know, Raven, you and I, we come from the tribal lands. My tribe is Eskimo, and we are the largest landholders of any tribe on earth. Did you know that my tribal land begins where the GMT is, at the zero, or the longitude? That means at the time of London, that's where the East Greenland begins. And then it goes west for 13 hours up to the Chukchi Mountains. So the land of the Eskimos had 13 time zones on it. And from the top of the world to the bottom of the land of the Eskimos, the big 747 would take more than 9 hours to fly. So it gives you an idea how big it is. And I'm explaining that so you can understand what my father speaks about. My father told us that the greatest distance in existence of man is not from here to there, nor from there to here. Nay, the greatest distance in existence of man is from his mind to his heart. Unless he conquers that distance, he can never learn to soar like an eagle and realize his own immensity within. And I think it's so fascinating that my father comes from the greatest tribal land on earth, and they know about distance. And they really do. These people at the top of the world, they do know about distance. But the greatest distance is not from here to there, nor from there to here. They say it's from his mind to his heart. Unless you conquer that distance, you yourself can never learn to soar like an eagle and realize your own immensity within. The immensity is really fascinating. I come from the top of the world. There's no trees up here. So the sky is very, very big. And because it's so dark up here, the sky is lit with incredible rays of stars and the northern lights. You can't really, you have to really come and see it before you understand what it means, really. There are many people who have seen small rays of northern lights, but where we come from, they come in rainbow colors. And when you look at the sky as you lie down on the ground, the immensity of the sky is enormous. But this is what my father tells us, that yours, the big sky, as big as it is, it will only take about 10-15 minutes to know exactly where you are within the radius of 0.5 mile. But that's how easy it is to get to know the sky. But to get to know you, Raven, it's going to take me lifetimes to get to know you, because you yourself within is so more complex than the big sky is. So much bigger than the big sky is.
Right.
And it's going to take me lifetime to get to know you.
Right, and sometimes we get in our own way. And speaking from where I am here in this part of Turtle Island, we have to get away from the I into the we in order to be able to see us all, ourself included, because that's how I feel the immensity. Like the more that we step away from the I in this country and come back into that family that the Lakota people call the Teoshipe, come back into that, then I feel that we can feel that immensity of who we are, and become a part of that creation that you're talking about, that sky, that deepness of the. You know, I've never been to that part of the world. I just can imagine how beautiful it is. Just been to Montana, and I know how big the deep skies are there. And
yes,
so I can feel that. And
You know, when in Montana with the Assiniboine people, I was there with the American Indian Institute at the elders gathering there where my elders from Greenland. They were absolutely, their land is absolutely so much like at home here, but the sky is big. Yeah. But what was lacking there was the northern lights. Of course, it's so far south that you can't really see it there, but you have to go up north to see it. And the northern lights, for us, represent the people in the next world. Did I tell you that?
Yeah.
The northern lights are the ones you loved. And who loved you, who has gone to the next world, to the other side.
Beautiful.
And when you remember them, when you remember your loved one who loved you, that person will be so happy that he immediately will be inviting his family and his friends and his relations, and they will dance for you. And they will dance for you as far as the eye can see, in all directions. And at times they will come so close to you that you can almost touch them. Yeah. The most beautiful part of it is you can hear them dancing. That's why they say the next world is no further away than the reach of your hand.
It's beautiful.
Isn't it incredible?
It is. It's really beautiful.
Yours are my loved ones. They are no further away than the reach of your hand. It's just that you and I, we don't know how to reach that. We haven't been taught how to do it. And, but they're no further away than that. And I think, wow, isn't it incredible that these old people, those who never went to school, they never went to university, but they understood life to be so incredibly simple.
Yeah.
That all they did was to reach with their hands up to the sky, and they could touch their loved ones in the next world.
Yeah.
And I think, wow.
It goes
I want to grow up and become like them one day.
Yeah, I think it goes back to what you were saying in the beginning, is that when we make life that living ceremony, I believe that, well, I won't say believe, I know that in my heart that when we become that ceremony,
mm-hmm.
those things that we're talking about, we can feel those, we can see those. And the other world, you know, that it's right there with us at every moment, and the ancestral spirit world and the world that
yes.
we're in now. And the veil, I feel the veil every time for me as we're speeding up, as the earth is speeding up, and the ancestors are definitely helping us in this time that we're in right now with
mm-hmm.
with all the chaos that's happening out there. And the more that we become that ceremony and do ceremony, I feel that like my blockers on my eyes and my mm-hmm. blockers on my ears are being lifted. And I can hear
mm-hmm.
and I can see. And what you were saying is like I can also feel. I know when I'm sitting in an EP ceremony and I'm praying, I feel my dad touching my hand.
Mm-hmm.
I feel my grandfather. I can see it. And so we have to bring that ceremony, like you're saying, into our everyday life.
Yes, absolutely. Without that, no one can live. No one can live without the ceremony. And I think it's so incredible that I'm a very privileged man. Did I tell you that? I'm really a privileged man. I grew up with these people, the old ones. You know, when I came to North America in 1974 to the mainland, in Greenland, so, and I was down in the Mohawk Territory in Montreal, and they were creating smoke. They call it smudging in English, but for us, we create smoke. And I was telling them that in my land where I come from, my grandmother would tell us that of all created things, The only thing which will disappear in front of your eyes is smoke. Thus, they will invite the smoke to come to them and ask the great one to remove all the defilements they carry within. And then my grandmother would look all at all of us and say, and everyone carries defilement. And of course, as children, we would ask her, why, but we're not sick. And she would smile and say, so you know, what you see, you get defilement. What you hear, you get defilement. What you think, you get defilement. What you feel, you get defilement. So all these are defilements we carry. Defilement is the illnesses we carry. Things we shouldn't hear, we hear. Things we shouldn't see, we see. Things we shouldn't feel, we feel. So all these, and the smoke, when it comes to us, it will lift away all that. But the old ones, and this is what I like about so much about my elders, they will wash their hands, and then they will put the smoke into their eyes, and they will say, when the smoke clears, I will only see your beauty. Then they will wash their hands again, and then they will put it into the ears, and they will say, when the smoke clears, I will only hear good things from you. And then they will wash their hands again, and they will put it into their mouth and say, when the smoke clears, I will only say good things to you. And then they do that again with their hand, and they put their smoke into the heart and say that when the smoke clears, you will only see my beauty in my heart. And I think, isn't it incredible, Raven, that those small people have thought of everything?
Yeah, I always, it always amazes me how the old ones, they just understood, you know, like the sage and the burning of the sage. And like, because we all, like, we all carry something, when you know, whether we know it or not, and to be able to to cleanse ourselves daily. And I, the elders have told me, many of them, whatever that we do to help us be like, you know, that smudging you're talking about, taking that smoke, doing those prayers in that way, because we the earth is definitely like, there's things happening and things attached to us, and whether we're conscious of it or not conscious of it, and to be able to set and take that smoke and wipe yourself clean. And here in the Northwest, they use that cedar to, you know, wipe to wipe those things away and send it into the, you know, to the West, and send it home. And and I think that's important for us, again, going back into what you're talking about, that life as a ceremony. And and coming back into, like, all things are sacred. You know, we've moved a lot. I'm not saying everyone, but I'm saying one of the things that I see daily is how people have gotten away from Mother Earth being sacred in all things, and us included. And we have to come back into that. I just wanted to say, this is 5:28. This is Raven Redbone. I'm sitting here with Uncle. We're talking about bringing the ceremony back into our life. I just have to do a station ID, and we'll be right back.
I don't know what people around the world are doing, but do you know what they're listening to? Join me on Spin the Globe every Friday morning, and together we'll explore the sounds of the world. From Tuvan throat singing, to politically charged Afrobeat.
Major combat operations belongs to us. Seek to protect Iraq's natural resources.
And everything in between. Live locally and groove globally with Spin the Globe. Fridays from 10 till noon, only on Chaos, KAOS 89.3 FM, Olympia.
And this is Chaos Radio, and this is Raven Redbone. I'm sitting here with Uncle, and just wanted to go back into a little bit, if we could, Uncle, about our daily walk and how, like, in this society that we're all moving forward. And I wanted to touch base also on, you talk a lot about the ice melting and how that affects all of us in the world.
Mm-hmm.
If we can touch.
You know, yes, you're right. I do come from a land which has the biggest ice in the northern hemisphere. And when I was born 63 years ago, it was big. It was on the average more than 5 kilometers thick. And that is more than 3 miles. But because the way you and I, we have lived so far, it's melting really, really badly. It's now about 2 kilometers on the average, which means a very big part of it is now gone and will never return. I don't know if I told you, but I've been speaking at the UN for many years now, many times giving talks around the world about the melting of the big ice. I spoke about it to the UN, one of the bodies of UN, in August of 1978. Because in 1963, two young men went hunting back home where I come from. And as the ancestors have done so, they go to the one of the many, many fingers of the big ice. And that particular finger where my family comes from, they go there and they go and touch the big ice. And she's big. At that time, it was 1.5 kilometers, which is 1 mile tall, wall of a big ice. So they go there and touch it. And as they were doing so and doing the ceremonies, one of them was looking up to the up the wall of the big ice and noticed that the water was trickling out of the big ice. That was in the month of January 1963. Now, in 1963, on the average, the temperature will be minus 35 Celsius. I can't remember how much it is in Fahrenheit, but it's cold it is. At minus 35, everything should be frozen, scientifically. But the water was flowing from the big ice. So they went home and told people down there where they come from that, you know, strange thing going on, a phenomena. Water was trickling out of the big ice. And the old people were patronizingly touching these young men and said, oh yeah, it's okay, we understand you. But they were thinking they must have been drinking beer at the American Air Base. And then in the month of March, some elders went hunting, and they go, just like all the others, ceremoniously go and touch the big ice. And then as they were doing so, they noticed that the water was trickling out of the big ice. That was the sign of the beginnings of the climate change. So 15 years later, 1978, I spoke at UN and talked about it. I remember I got a standing ovation. Holy shit. 10, 15 minutes at least, I got a standing ovation. And the next day, I was deemed to be a well-spoken young Eskimo. But I was really excited about it. So I went home and told my elders. Because when I went home, my responsibility to tell the elders, because my father and my mother would invite elders so I could report to them. And that is why I've been a runner for the elders for so many years now. And as I'm telling the elders how well I was received at UN, my father interrupted my talk and said, son, did he hear you? I looked at my father and said, father, they gave me a standing ovation, clapping the hands. And then he interrupted me again and said, but son, did he hear you? Then I realized he was asking me if they heard the message. And of course, nobody listened to the message. But they did say, though, that I'm a well-spoken young Eskimo. And thus, now it is too late. Yeah. None of us can stop the melting of the big ice anymore. We have never been so many in the world now. And we are all consumers, and we are consuming far beyond capacity, particularly in the Western world, where you and I, we are now, in North America and in Europe. And then the way we treat Mother Earth is not very good, as you know.
Yeah.
You know, I was giving a talk in Olympia many years ago, in downtown Olympia.
Oh, really?
And yeah, I was, yeah. And one man was very indignant because I talked about that we don't treat the earth very good. The climate change is really affecting everyone now because of that. He stomped on the floor and said, "We in Seattle, we are the very first one to do recycling of the garbage." I clapped my hands and said, "Thank you, I know that. But you know what? Seattle sells the garbage to Oregon, who puts them in the ground.
Right.
And that's what happens. Seattle sells the garbage to Oregon, who puts them in the ground. So, yes, we do recycling in Seattle, but we sell them and pay Oregon people the money, and they put them inside the earth. So we're not very good in the way we treat Mother Earth anywhere.
Yeah.
In the United States of America and Canada, we use only 2.8% of recyclables. We reuse only 2.8%. Germany in Europe is the best. They use 30%. So the garbage is being reused only 30% in Germany and only 2.8% in the United States and Canada. So we're not very good in reusing, but everybody recycle. But the climate change has nothing to do with the garbage. It has to do with the environment and ecology we live on.
Right.
The automobiles you and I, we drive, are the ones who melt the big ice so fast. As you know, when we drive on I-90 in New York, the asphalt on the road eats the rubber from the car tire, and those fly up in the sky, and the jet stream catches it, and every jet stream ends up in Greenland, and then it freezes over and becomes too heavy, and they fall down on the big ice. And of course, when the sun comes back, immediately the black rubber melts away because the sun heats it up very quickly. And thus the big ice melts so fast that there are tens of thousands of rivers pouring out of the big ice 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. And the ocean is rising very fast. And you know, I was so interesting. I just came from Zurich the other day. Yeah, I was doing some work in Zurich before I went to Greenland. And they were saying nobody will notice that water is rising. It becomes so gradual. It's coming up so gradually. Nobody really notices it. And that's the very worst thing we can do. Not noticing, because we're endangering so many millions of people that they will lose their homes. I don't know if you've been to Boston, Raven, but I was giving a talk in Boston maybe a year ago. They have built their downtown on a landfill. 650,000 people live on this landfill, which is only 50 centimeters away from the water. and that would be under the water. And they're going to have to move. We can't just leave them alone. They're going to have to help them find new homes.
Right.
And London, England, they spend 60 billion euro to make a dike, which is only 1 meter, 3 feet thick, 3 feet high. And 8 million people live in downtown London, which will be underwater. We can't just leave them alone. We're going to have to help them somehow. But they did spend 60 billion euro, though, and made a dike, which is only 1 meter tall. I guess they hadn't read the newspapers. So they don't understand that the water would be more than 1 meter tall in yours and my lifetime. The list goes on. The list goes on about the climate change. Everyone busy walking about, worrying about Bangladesh and the small islands in the Pacific and in African coast. But nobody's taking care of it at home. Nobody speaks about it at home.
Right. And like, I know, like, this with New Orleans, with what everything happened there, they were told by the old ones not to build there because of,
yep,
of the what it had happened. It could all been avoided. And I'm not familiar if there was any type of prophecy from your people about the time that we're in. And, of course, we want to help people and uplift people. And that's one of the reasons why myself is on the air. I'm hoping people are really listening. And I feel that in my heart, I know that we're all here now, and we're doing that work to uplift and to help Mother Earth. And my heart tells me that we can turn it all around, but we have to start listening. We have to start listening to our elders, the earth. We have to go to, you know, this gasoline. Like, I'm prime example. I have a Subaru out there. I mean, it might get better mileage, but I really want to see hemp. I want to see hemp coming back. I want to see these things that are, that we can have all these things, but we can do it in a better way. There is a better way, and we just have to start listening to the old ones, that already knew, and be a mirror.
Yeah.
And
absolutely.
And what you're talking about, like the 8 million people that are in London, they're all our relatives.
That's right.
All our family.
Yeah. But unfortunately, the way we are now, we don't even speak of it. And we don't really think of it. So we just keep doing the same old stuff as we've been doing. This is why that I was done to tell you about the melting of the big ice. After so many years of talking about it, I went home one day and complained to my mother that nobody's listening, nobody hears the message. And then she closed her eyes in front of me and took my hand. And she said, "Son, you're going to have to learn to melt the ice in the heart of man." And I said, "Yes." I closed my eyes as well. And then she said, "You know, only by melting the ice in the heart of man, man will have a chance to change and begin using his knowledge wisely." And she yanked my hand so I can open my eyes. So I did. And here she was standing with a beautiful smile. And she said, "Okay, now how do I do that?" And then she closed her eyes again, so I closed my eyes. And she said again, "Son, you're going to have to learn to melt the ice in the heart of man. Only by melting the ice in the heart of man, man will have a chance to change and begin using his knowledge wisely."
Yeah.
So that's what we're going to have to do. The easiest ice to be melted is the one on the ground. The hardest ice to be melted is the one in the heart of man. Yeah. At minus 40 Fahrenheit, when you put your hand on the big ice, within a minute, the imprint of your hand will become visible. That's how easy it is to melt melt the ice on the ground. The hardest ice to be melted is the one in the heart of man. And only by melting that ice in the heart, man will have a chance to change and begin using his knowledge wisely. So we will stop doing the same old stuff as we've been doing. The greatest chance for the betterment of the future is for you and I to use our vast knowledge wisely. But the hardest thing to do is, though, to change. My father raised us to learn to do the right thing from the beginning. He told us so often, the hardest thing to learn is to unlearn what you already know. The hardest thing to learn is to unlearn what you already know.
That,
and you know what, Raymond? It is true.
I totally, that rings true to me. When I started this year with working with my uncle that I'm going to be doing a humbleche with, and I come to him not knowing nothing, even though I might think I might know something, I really don't. And I think by doing that, we come in clean, in that we are able to hear and see in a better way. In the ceremony, it comes right back to that ceremony, and I just know, like, if we come back into that point to where we join that prayer, we have to change that prayer, and come into that ceremony. And what you just said is coming in like a newborn, like really not knowing anything, and again paying attention to the elders. And trying to mirror how they lived. I feel the more that we mirror how the old ones live, we can come back into that balance. I just wanted to say that it's 5:40. 5:45 here at Chaos Radio 89.3 FM. I'm sitting here talking with Uncle and. I just found out, like, I thought Chief Phil was going to join us, but I found out that the line 2 is not working, so apologize for that. But he was excited like myself. He's an old friend of yours, and we have a lot that we're all doing together and bringing people into that sacred space, and that just knowing... where to go from here, and that sacred ceremony coming in under any of the old ways that we walked on earth, and coming back into an indigenous viewpoint for me, I think is very crucial in order for the whole world to move forward to and no matter where we have lived, there was indigenous people and they understood the land, and we got about 15 more minutes. I just have one more idea. I want to come back and just talk a little bit about how Uncle, would encourage people to step into that power. We'll be right back.
Are you a smoker? Seattle's Fred Hutchinson Cancer Research Center is enrolling people in a new study that may help you quit. The study is free, and it's available to you online. If you're interested in quitting smoking, go to www.webquit.com. You will not be paid, but you will receive tools for dealing with the urges to smoke. For more information, please visit www.webquit.com.
And this is Make No Bones About It. And Miss Raven Redbone sitting here with Uncle. And I was just wondered if we could go into that, what I was just asking about, how people would bring that, how you would encourage people.
How I encourage people?
Yeah. I know that you go all over the world and talk and give people the tools, but how do you do that? How do you encourage people? Because I know, I can only speak for my own, myself. Like, I work for the state, here, and in my mind, I feel that's a part of the problem, but... and I'm trying to do all the right things, and I'm trying to take that leap of faith, and it's, I got two kids, and the system is not working, and I've known this since I was a little boy, and I know that we're in the final stages of whatever it is, but people need structure, and we're all feeling that collective fear You know, like, I move forward. I know, I, and we all know it's the right thing to do. And we're, mm-hmm. you know, like you were saying, I do recycle. I do these things. I take the bus. I do all the things that I know, and I'm trying to promote, you know, us going back to hemp and learning these old ways in order for us to move forward and helping as we go along. It's coming back into the community and doing that work. But, like, I still have a little bit, like, I would like to move out of the position I'm in into a bigger position of power to do this. How would you encourage somebody?
You know that I travel quite a bit around the world, and I have been able to succeed in developing a pretty sizable organization on my own, and I get them together every 3 months around the world, and I encourage them by allowing them to walk with me, or not allowing myself to walk with them. My mother told me, never follow somebody. When you follow somebody, all you see is their back. One day they will fall, and when they fall, you cannot see what's happening in front of you because you don't know what it is. So if you're going to do something, ask people to walk with you. So I ask people to come and walk with me. And we walk together and encourage each other. And thus, we're able to do some changes within ourselves. You know, the most beautiful smile is a smiling heart, as you know. When you smile in your heart, you know it yourself. And when you do that, people in your world will notice that you're smiling from your heart. And this is the beginning of the change which is necessary for you to advance yourself in your world, to come to the next level of reality. And that's what I do. And then, of course, I work as a healer, what I've been trained to do. So I do healing work all over the world. It fascinates me to be able to touch people. And I touch thousands upon thousands and thousands of people every month. It's fascinating. Raven, one day I wish you to come to my circle just so you can observe what happens when you touch people. Because when you touch people, you are part of it, being the tool for change. And every one of us, we need to change from what we've been doing before. This is why my grandmother speaks about that the world is full of ritual. Her greatest fear before she died, that she would leave behind a ritual. She wanted to leave behind her a ceremony, a living ceremony. The one of the very last things she stated to us, life is a ceremony in itself, worthy celebrating with a ceremony. Let's do that, all of us. Let's do a ceremony in the honor of our ancestors, for they are our roots. And when you and I, we have good roots, we will grow up and become solid, big trees who have enormous leaves and branches where people can rest beneath. And at one point, the flowers will come and they will blossom. Then the winds of change will come and blow away the seeds. So your ceremony will live somewhere else. Let's do that, Raven. Let's be that change.
Yeah.
We often speak of, let's do it in reality, in the living beauty. Let's give them a beautiful smile from the heart. The most beautiful smile is a smiling heart. Let's do that and see what happens.
Absolutely.
In my world, it's fascinatingly beautiful. My grandmother says that the future is very beautiful. powerfully beautiful, she said. If only you and I we can learn to see it. Let's learn to see the powerful beauty which lies ahead of us.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And in extending our hearts and our hands to the people that are around us, and giving people that power that you talked about, that just acknowledging people out there every day, and reaching out with your heart, and I just know just by saying hello in a good way, that's a part of that ceremony. And doing these works, like we're going to be downtown this weekend coming up, drumming for peace with the Turtle Women Rising, and the Indigenous Grandmothers are going to be in D.C. drumming for peace and the veterans. And we hold this space downtown, and it's a very sacred place to the nations that live here. And we know that it's a portal, and it's a where they used to enter from the Star Nation. And it's just important when we activate these sites to talk about that ceremony, and how, like, when we do that, it opens up all these things that you were talking about for the people, and to come back into that. What you were talking about, what I vision is seeing life as a child, that wonderment, that fun, that smile that you did when you were a kid, where it brought me, and walking, like you were saying earlier, like we forget everything we know. Yeah, the way we're doing business and create something new. So we got about 4 minutes, and I always ask my guests if they got a saying here in the Northwest. My Uncle Chelsea Nauman always talks about, if you have something that's on your heart, and if you don't say it, it'll follow you around until you do. And I was just wondering if you had something that you wanted to say that's on your heart. We can do that now.
Say it again, Raven.
I was just saying that there's a saying from the coastal people here that if you have something that's on your heart, and if you don't say it, it'll follow you around until you do. And I was just wondering if you had anything that was on your heart that you wanted to share in these last couple of minutes that we have.
I have so much I want to share. We have little time, and you can only touch upon a few things. But the most important thing is I want to share with people from the West Coast and whoever is listening, is that the most beautiful smile is a smiling heart. Time for you and I to smile to each other with the beauty we carry, and learn to live the beauty we have, and walk tall and powerful as you are meant to be for times and times to come. So that's what I want to share. Time for you and I to walk the powerful beauty we carry, and smile with a smiling heart. When you do that, everyday issues within you will disappear, be blown by the breeze of the wind, and you'll be standing there tall and powerful as you're meant to be. And you can do that for times and times to come. Let's do that together. Let's walk that beautiful red road, tall and powerful as we're meant to be, for times and times to come. And realize that the world will not move on unless the red man is involved in the country of the United States, and in Canada, and in Mexico, and all the countries way down to the bottom of the world. The black man needs to be involved. Our involvement, the richness of the world will become alive. Remember, the old one said, the circle, which has no beginning, no ending, in which we all belong. And we do all belong in that circle. The beauty of the circle is that we cannot see each other's backs. And the strength of the circle is that we can only see each other's beauty. How can anyone ever be put down when we only look at their beauty?
Absolutely.
No one will be put down again in that circle.
Oh, yeah. And I appreciate you calling in, Uncle, and sharing with us. Just have about a minute left. And again, thank you from my heart, from my beautiful smile to yours. Appreciate you taking the time this evening to speak with us. Thank you.
Oh.
And this was Make No Bones About It. It's Raven Redbone. And I want to thank Uncle again for calling in. And up next is G.W. Galbraith from View from Shore. And until next week, take care. Thank you, Uncle.
Oh,
bye-bye. Bye. And up next is G.W. Galbraith from View from Shore. And this is Raven Redbone. And until next week, take care. And we're right there.
Hi, this is Teokusungung.